Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. Leaders Speak, a conversation on changing the way government does business. Whether it's getting big things done in government or changing the way government does business, we bring together thoughtful perspectives from a host of leading practitioners and academics in the field. This special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speak, focuses on how analytics and risk management can, when employed at an enterprise level, assist government agencies in strengthening their decision-making capabilities and, in turn, improve their overall performance. First up, Tom Davenport, Distinguished Professor of Information Technology and Management at Babson College. Professor Davenport joined us for an in-depth conversation on analytics and its strategic importance.
Well, I really define analytics as systematic efforts to analyze data in a quantitative fashion. So that might be statistics, econometrics. Sometimes people get into textual analytics, particularly in the intelligence field. Anytime you use systematic analysis of data to help make a decision. And analytics is really a subset of business intelligence. So I usually think of business intelligence, that's the broad category in the information technology field for what you do with data to help understand how your organization is performing and kind of what's going on in your business. And it consists of two things. There's reporting, which is simplified reports or queries or dashboards or scorecards, but that's all about the past and it's all about what happened last quarter, last month. And it doesn't really tell you anything about why something happened. And it doesn't go forward into the future at all. Analytics are the other part of business intelligence that starts to give you an understanding of why something happened, which is always useful. And then once you have a model that predicts the past, you can start predicting the future. And that's incredibly useful. So analytics, I think, is a more valuable activity than reporting, but you kind of need reporting before you can really get into analytics much.
It's no secret that companies have for some time successfully analyzed data to gain a competitive edge. And now that competitive analytics and business intelligence techniques are mainstream, to what extent can governments use the techniques to enhance its overall performance and make better decisions?
While government organizations may not be competing on analytics, you're starting to see some evidence that they are beginning to transform themselves through the use of analytics. You see it in certain sectors. Certainly intelligence has often been about analytics, and they're heavy users of it and have been for a while. The big initiative there is how do we get different intelligence agencies in the United States to share all that data? Healthcare, huge issue right now. How do we use comparative effectiveness analytics to know which treatment is really most effective and most worth paying for? How do we use analytics to identify the patients who are most likely to contract diabetes, say? Big initiatives in healthcare. Taxes, I'm afraid, are another area where analytics are pretty heavily used to kind of identify the people who might be underpaying or not paying at all their taxes. And certainly in the military, there have always been a lot of analytical activities related to supply chain. The Army, in particular, very focused on kind of the human supply chain of how do we attract people to enlist in the first place and who's most likely to stay with us over time so we can kind of focus our efforts on keeping the people in who we think have a good chance of doing that. But all sorts of opportunities, I think, but still early days.
Professor Davenport outlines the Delta model for assessing analytic capability within the public sector.
D is for data. As you suggested earlier, Michael, you got to have good data. And we found that when companies compete on analytics, they tend to view analytics as an enterprise, not as a bunch of little localized silos. So that's combining data, that's combining analytical people in many cases, and also combining, you know, technology and technology solutions. L in the Delta model is for leadership, probably the single most important thing. So, you know, if you've got somebody leading the charge, you'll do very well. In government, I think the best example of that is when Dr. Ken Kaiser was head of the VA, really led the charge on putting electronic medical records in place and starting to do things like disease management and so on with that data. T is for target. get. So where's your focus? For the VA, it's probably going to be on something involving patient care. For the Postal Service, it's probably going to be around something related to logistics as a primary target, because that's where you spend all your money and that's what creates your performance. Finally, A is for analysts. But you need some people who are able to think analytically, who can do the data analysis for you, and even more important, who can communicate effectively with decision makers about what the numbers say.
Tom Davenport offers the following advice to government agencies on how to leverage the right amount of analytics.
Well, if you look at the Delta model, Michael, I think the D is not a problem. The E is an issue in government, because we tend to be pretty fragmented in most agencies. The analytical people aren't talking to each other. The L word is probably the biggest problem, in that we don't have enough highly analytical leaders in government who are able to really press for this and devote the resources to it and so on. So I'm hoping that somehow they will emerge fairly soon. Targets thing is not that tough, I think, for most government agencies. They can figure out, you know, where are the most fruitful targets. Finally, the A word for analysts, in a way, it's a problem because there aren't that many in government. Less of a problem because you can fairly easily procure them externally. I'm not sure that enough of that serious analytical work actually gets used in analyst reports, and even less so in policymaker decision making. So at the start of the funnel, we do really well. At the end of the funnel, where it comes to analysts and decision makers, not so well.
Professor Davenport also outlines a framework for improving decision making.
It's a 4I framework. It's not like Delta. It's not an acronym. But the first I is really to identify what are your key decisions. I mean, when I go around and talk to organizations, I say, you know, do you know what your top 10 or top 15 or top 20 decisions are? And very few do. And, you know, I think we can't make all of them better. So we should identify which ones, both a strategic perspective and an operational perspective, which ones are really critical to our effective performance. So then for those, you start taking a look at them, and I call that the inventory stage. So how well are they made today on average? How long do they take? Who's involved in them? You know, get a sense of how broken they are, how much opportunity there is for improvement, if you will. And then the third stage is to intervene in them. And maybe the difficult thing these days is there are a lot of possible interventions that most organizations haven't taken advantage of. You know, one being, if we're going to do a lot of that particular decision, we can automate it to some degrees. And that's one of the things that the Social Security Administration is doing with regard to disability claims. If it seems like a clear, open and shut case that a person has a disability and we want to get it through the system very quickly, might as well make that decision in an automated or at least a semi-automated fashion so you can get it done. I think IBM has been working with them on that particular project. Another would be just to think about who's involved in the decision and should it be a little bit broader. One of the things the Obama administration is trying to do is to get more, you know, public input into decision making. Another would be thinking about, you know, the mix of emotion and intuition and rationality in it. So there's some decisions like moral decisions that emotion seems to be absolutely essential to. If people lose the emotional part of their brain, they can't make those decisions at all. Whereas other decisions for which there's data available and for which, you know, the stakes are high really probably should not be purely intuition based. So the intervention step is really stepping back and saying, what can we do to make this decision better? And then finally, there's an institutionalization process to say, okay, if we really care about making decisions better, what are the things we can put in place, like a set of decision analysts or coaches, like a process for looking back at how decisions turn out, that could really make us get better at this over the long run?
Next up, Professor Karen Hardy introduces the concept of enterprise risk management. This is especially timely given the Obama administration's focus on accountability and transparency that has prompted a renewed focus on risks and controls.
Well, actually, you know, there are several definitions out there to define enterprise risk management. And some are rather cryptic, to be quite honest with you. But at the end of the day, enterprise risk management is pretty much the process by which the management of risk within an organization are not just confined to a specific area or discipline like information technology or human resources, but these risks are raised to the executive level within an organization so that the nature and impact of those risks can be considered and assessed at the most strategic level within the organization. So really what I'm saying is that risks within an organization are not confined to stovepipes in terms of consideration of impact on the organization's objective and mission, but it's developed into a portfolio that's raised to the executive level within an organization.
Government has always been involved in managing risks, even as risk management has not generally been recognized as a fundamental function of government. Here is Professor Hardy providing examples of risk management in the federal government.
You know, there are quite a few examples within the federal sector, and one of the things I don't want to indicate is that risk management is something new within the federal arena. Actually, you have agencies involved and engaged in risk management for some time. For example, you have Ginnie Mae, the government National Mortgage Association. They've been involved in, you know, the housing area for years. And then you have the National Transportation Safety Board. They've been involved in transportation safety risk. They're pretty much an independent federal agency charged by Congress to investigate those civil aviation accidents with the United States. And they've been doing a pretty good job of doing that. So it's not something that's new within the federal government. However, you do have some agencies who have embarked on this new concept of enterprise risk management fairly recently, such as the Department of Homeland Security. They've been working towards developing a framework in addressing security risks for our nation. Again, risk management is not new within the federal sector, but those are just a couple of examples of agencies that's working on risk management.
Hardy illustrates the benefits and challenges of pursuing an enterprise risk management strategy and outlines recommendations to government leaders.
You know, the benefits are pretty anecdotal at this point because we're at a place where we can't really quantify or measure those benefits. Again, risk management or enterprise risk management is pretty much in its infancy within the government space. But in terms of benefits, I would say that initially agencies have a chance to gain a cultural understanding of the importance of how to sustain high credibility as an agency when it comes to managing risk. Another benefit would include the opportunity for agencies to make more educated decisions about how they operate their agencies. One of the things I've seen, and it's more of a cultural thing, is that the dynamic in terms of interactions between those agency leaders across the entire agency, actually having those leaders come together and look at risk at a holistic enterprise level is also a key benefit that agencies can realize. And one other thing is that agencies can align risk with the agency program goals and objectives, which a lot of agencies do not have the opportunity to do. Now, on the flip side of that, some of the challenges for enterprise risk management really include providing the appropriate foundation and assessment and the management platform for actually implementing enterprise risk management. If you don't have the senior buy-in, if you don't have a structure or a platform or even a standard for implementing enterprise risk management, then that really causes a huge challenge within organizations as far as moving forward.
This discussion on making better decisions highlights possibilities. It introduces two powerful tools, analytics and enterprise risk management, that can strengthen decision-making and improve organizational performance, ultimately changing the way government does business. We hope you've enjoyed today's discussion on changing the way government does business. This has been Leaders Speak, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.